That is a lie. And the ruling oligarchs want you to believe in your heart of hearts that you need them and you need to be a spectator in their spectator sport. I say screw their sport. Let's play our own game.
Hi everyone, I'm Spiro with NewsBud, joined with the founder and editor of NewsBud, Sabelle Edmonds, for this week's edition of NewsBud's Roundtable. Sabelle, this is going to be an interesting show as we have two great guests this week. Joining us today is writer and senior producer for NewsBud, Kurt Nimmo, who has been very active both during the election and post-election with his coverage. We're also joined by NewsBud contributor James Corbett of CorbettReport.com, who has also been very active on the elective coverage, especially post-election. Sabelle, you haven't been so active with your election coverage.
That's true. We have been the most inactive people as a website, and that was a pledge I had committed to, and I stuck with it. But I have been enjoying the articles, analysis that Kurt has been publishing both at his website, and we will have the link to Kurt Nimmo's own website, but also on the articles that he has been publishing and writing for us at NewsBud. And I have been following James's interesting perspective and take, and again, as usual, it's original and it was very interesting. So with that in mind, I just wanted us to have this discussion because I see this synergy there. There are some differences, there are some similarities. But starting with you, Kurt, you were covering your analysis, were out there during the elections, and then you started immediately after the elections with the data you were gathering, publishing these articles on Donald Trump. Do we call him president since he hasn't been inaugurated? Because lately people have been picking on me. How come you say President Erdogan, but you say Obama? I have no idea why I've been doing it. It's not because I regard one my president, the other one not. So should we just go ahead and refer to him as
President-elect.
That's too long. Donald Trump cabinet and his selection, and with that particular angle, were you surprised, Kurt?
Yes, actually, I was surprised. I was under the impression, and I totally expected the establishment to put Hillary Clinton in there. That just went to show me that they are not as much in control of the election process as I thought they were.
Now, that's interesting. Because I was not surprised. I maybe some of the names would have been different. The names, there are so many names. There are these buckets, and I think it's a mixed buckets for me. The well-known Uber neoliberals and Uber neocons, and with a lot of commonality that you can't really distinguish one from another. But I was not surprised. I mean, what were you expecting?
I was expecting the establishment to put Hillary Clinton in there. You know, what they did to Bernie Sanders, you can see how they can fix elections. But it was so close that I figured, and in the past they've done this, they've rigged elections when they're this close. So I figured they would do that, but apparently they're not in control as much as I thought they were.
Okay, well, let me put it this way, and this is the devil's advocate, and I pose this for both of you here. Well, I studied psychology. I by no means I'm an expert in psychology, but I remember very similar climate during the end of Bush administration and with Obama election. And it was this people again being surprised, and the same motto was played. Okay, mainstream media portrayed him as anti-establishment, and actually they had this pseudo kind of conflict with him, not very complimentary. Of course, the race played a major factor because a lot of people believed since he's not particular color, he's black, not white or half black or whatever it is, it's going to be different. You know, like we see these cards being played. Oh, because she's a woman, establishment, they don't want Hillary to get elected because somebody's purple. And that, actually, I call that reverse psychology, meaning people have been angry they have been not, they have not been satisfied. They have, and that's putting it mildly, they have been angry. They've had it with the establishment. Corruption, all the waste, fraud, abuse, criminal deeds by the government. So the fact that people have been asking, wanting anti-establishment candidate, or how would I put it, underdog candidate, that factor has remained constant. Now, if we put ourselves in the shoes of the establishment, and they do a lot of studying all the marketing and the sales and the psychology of marketing, and say, people are in this position, and they were right before Obama got elected. So why don't we get the, both candidates are our candidates, but the one we really want will show that one as the one we don't like, so that that candidate will win. I mean, if I'm the establishment, if I were to be the establishment, I would say the reverse psychology worked with Obama. Why not use it with Donald Trump? So my question is, Could this, especially seeing Donald Trump's cabinet and what you have been writing, Kurt, well, was this a successful implementation of reverse psychology method with the majority and saying, you know, like Pavlovian dog, you do this and this and this, and people are expected to do this and this and this. Kurt?
Yeah, it's a rerun on Obama. It actually is. I mean, they pulled basically the same stunt this time around by pandering to people that consider, like you said, tired of the government, tired of the corruption, and in my case, tired of the wars. They just pulled this reverse psychology thing that you're talking about, that people vote for them. And it was a close election. I mean, she won the popular vote, supposedly. And I think that he'll do fine by them. I mean, he's a little eccentric, and he's an outlier, but he's gonna play ball with them, albeit with his eccentric, you know, style.
James.
Well, you certainly won't get any argument from me that this isn't a boon for various parts of the establishment, because as we see, I mean, let's be fair to the Trump supporters out there who are going to say, well, he hasn't picked the cabinet yet. Let's wait to see who he picks. Well, I haven't heard a name floated yet that I don't think is utterly reprehensible. But this just came over the news wires. They're reaching out to Romney as potential Secretary of State. Eight. Yay. Well, better than Bolton or someone like that, or Giuliani. But still, I mean, it's just a cesspool. So drain the swamp and fill it up with more of the cesspool is apparently the modus operandi for the incoming Trump team. But again, hey, let's wait. Let's see what the picks actually are, and then we'll pick them apart once they're actually named. But again, I haven't seen anything at all that really says anything anti-establishment to me. And of course, we do know the chief of staff is going to be the chair of the RNC. So I just can't fathom how people are still believing the drain the swamp type of stuff. But I think you're right. I didn't see as much of the mainstream bias against Obama as I see that has been completely obvious against Trump. I mean, all of the coverage is pro-Hillary. Hillary is the greatest. Hillary's manna from heaven. Trump is evil incarnate. I didn't see that type of coverage against Obama, but I think you're right that the sense, the spirit is the exact same. It's the hope and change. I call it Trump and change. It's the exact same ethos that's being tapped into, but this time on the right side of the pendulum rather than on the left side, just a mirror image. And it's exceptionally effective. It was effective in 2008, and it was exceptionally effective in 2016. There's a lot to say on it politically, but I think the most interesting aspects of this are not the political aspects. It is, for one, it is the exposure in the minds of a lot of the people who, up until this point, still have not even ventured into alternative media territory, suddenly discovering the extent of mainstream media bias. That's interesting. I really do see the alternative media really beginning to eclipse the mainstream, the establishment, the corporate, the mouthpiece media in this selection cycle. And I can't imagine that's part of the establishment's plan. But then again, at some point, I think there does have to be some sort of confrontation. And whatever happens, I think the mainstream narrative, the ability for mainstream media to set the narrative, has been at least diminished, if not fatally wounded. And that has to be for the good.
Well, here I have to turn to Spiro here. I didn't vote again again, I didn't vote. And my husband went out and voted, and he said that was his civic duty. So, I mean, 25 years, I have given up in that department. But Spiro, I said, I'm not voting, and you said you were not going to vote. And we decided to just paint. Our office has been under construction. So we spent the day painting, and that went on till like 10, 11 o'clock. But actually, we had a bet going on, and I said, Trump is going to win. And you said, absolutely not. I think Hillary is going to win. So tell us why you didn't vote and what made you make that bet that you lost painfully. And you owe me a few things, but a few things, not one thing, but to engage in such a losing bet.
Well, as Kurt stated earlier, you know, I mean, if you look throughout history, corruption is everywhere. If you can bet on it, it can be rigged. Whether it's the World Series that goes extra innings, you know, and they can stretch each advertisement that they're going to be able to promote and plug in and get every last cent they can just milk out of, you know, whether it's a sporting event or an election or whatever. I just don't personally hold much faith in this current system, in this current model, when we can look throughout history and see how easy it is to be manipulated and changed and rigged. And if you also look at, you know, like you Corbett was saying about the media bias and everything, and they were obviously promoting the Clinton camp big time, and you know, bashing Trump. Now, as Sabelle pointed out, an interesting point about, you know, the reverse psychology aspect of it, and how they're promoting Trump as being anti-establishment. I did think that they were going to give it to Clinton, but at the same time, there was that slight bit of doubt where I looked back at where Clinton ran in the past against Obama, and they put her as kind of like a formidable opponent to run against, like, and everyone's freaked out. I mean, so much of the Clinton past is documented as well, and a lot of that was coming out, and did that play a part in it? You know, I don't know. But as far as I'm concerned, personally, I don't think you get to the position and the stature and the power that Trump has, and to be on that stage without playing ball in the system, without being a part of that same establishment that he is saying that he's going to change or you know, whatever he's going to do when he takes office. So I personally have every election or selection cycle that comes up, we have seen it time and time again. It's going to be continual wars, the never-ending wars, you know, and the expansion of the wars and the expansion of the police state and the encroachment on civil liberties. I mean, this is the road we've been going down. Is this candidate going to be able to change all of that? I'm not going to make another bet. And if I do, I'm not going to bet for it.
You know, the point is that with Trump, he's such a ne'er-do-well, and also he's so politically, you know, inexperienced that the cabinet that he picks is going to be running his administration. Of course, that's been the case with most of these guys for, you know, for decades. They get the CFR and the Trilateral Commission in there, and they call all the shots. So, and that's basically what he's doing right now, is he's putting together a cabinet that's going to run it. He's got a lot of neocons in there. Like you said, Romney's probably going to be, my God, you said, what, the Secretary of State, was it, that you heard? I mean, you know, so it doesn't matter, because the same persons, the same people are being used, you know, to run the government. And, you know, so he's kind of irrelevant in a way. But, you know, Trump's kind of irrelevant. He's just a figurehead. And I've thought this all along, that the presidents are really don't have a whole lot of power. It's the people behind them that are running the show, you know, so.
But how about another? I don't know why I keep thinking in terms of psychology this evening for this debate. But James, where does it come from? I know it's all about conditioning, of centuries of conditioning, but the notion that people, 99% or whatever is the exact percentage, by the way, close to half of the population, voting age population, didn't vote, okay? So I was not among the minority. So there are many people like me out there who are saying, I'm not going to legitimize the system, because that whole process itself, legitimizing the system, I don't care who is running there. But this notion, James, that that one person, okay, knowing that there is this huge system, including the deep state, the shadow government, you want to call it, ginormous bureaucracy, okay, and with the United States, all these different branches, where does it come from, this notion that one man, one woman, okay, one this color person or that one person is going to come and woohoo, things are going to get better, and that person is going to set this stuff, it's going to be applied by this corrupt bureaucracy, and things are going to get better. Where does it come from, that notion of placing one's future or hope or what they expect to see or what they expect to change in one person, in one individual? Let's say even Donald Trump is the greatest person, or whoever it is, Smith is the greatest person. Just the fact that they're going and thinking, this person is going to change all the stuff. He's going to put the bad guys in jail. The good people are going to be awarded. And I mean, we're going to be seeing this amazing change. Where does it come from, James?
Well, I guess if you're a believer in set and immutable human nature, you would just say, well, it's just the primate nature of humanity, looking always to the leader of the tribe, leader of the pack, to set the rules and agenda for everyone. Or if you're a believer in everything being socially conditioned, well, then it's a product of the education system and the fact that we're mostly taught the great man theory of history. And I'm sure American students are probably taught about the presidents and what they accomplished and what they did, as if they were the ones acting and the only ones making these agendas come to fruition. You learn about Wilson, but you don't learn about Colonel Edward House. So you have a skewed version of what history is and how it functions and who the real players are. And as a result, you believe that a single individual is going to change the system. So either way, it seems that there is a psychological factor at play here. And the question is, can we replace that? I guess, again, if you're a believer in set and immutable human nature, then nope, we are just primates and we just function as looking towards the leader of the pack, the tribe, the group to set the agenda for us. If you believe that we can be educated out of such outdated and, well, fundamentally useless concepts, then perhaps we are part of the vanguard that is educating people on the real way that history functions and the fact that this doesn't change anything. I wonder, my question is, does each and every political generation that comes up have to get their political heart broken before they even start to question that system? And when that occurs, is that even a lasting heartbreak? I mean, look at the Obama hope and change phenomenon, which I don't think there's probably a few, but not very many people will say, you know, in the end, oh, yes, he lived up to his legacy. Oh, it was all so great. No, millions and millions and millions and millions of people who voted for this hope and change. He's not Bush. This is going to be so much better. Had their political heart broken. And then 8 years later got energized for voting for Clinton because at least she's better than Trump. Is that really that? And then now if Trump comes in and does exactly as it seems like he's going to do, appoint a bunch of establishment insiders and can continue on with the Pax Americana, the War Americana, the Bella Americana, then will in 8 years, will they all the Trump voters just vote for the next Republican candidate they throw out because it'll be better than the next Democrat candidate they throw out? I mean, is there a sense that there are more people who are waking up to this scam at all? Or do people just fall into it every single time? And again, I don't know if that's a matter of conditioning or whether it's a matter of human nature, whether certain people are more apt to understand and see this trick, and whether there is a certain group of people that will just never, ever wake up to it. I am obviously at least a little bit optimistic, or I wouldn't be here talking and doing this stuff, but I'm not 100% optimistic. I don't think it's certainly not going to change overnight. And to a certain extent, I think people need to be fooled and fooled again and fooled again and fooled again until they learn better.
Kurt, one question, and that is, in general, and that your writing reflects that as well, why is it that everybody else, not that I'm saying they are better or they were better, been excluded? This whole notion of third party or fourth party or the fifth party or the eighth party here in the United States. I mean, what is it that you know, I know you didn't write about it, and very few people have been writing about other people. I can't even think of many names. Okay, Gary Johnson is the guy. He's the libertarian. And then people started some very small faction talking about Jill Stein. But what is it that, like, as an author or analyst, even as this whole race, this nonsense, this $6 billion plus waste of entertainment, that even you don't find worthy to analyze or write about, whether it is, I don't know, Jill Stein or Gary Johnson or XYZ, by saying that they just disregard. It's so quickly disregarded, the notion of third or fourth or fifth or eighth party. And that becomes some kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy. And this is for people who believe in election, which I don't. In this system, I don't. But let's say for those people who believe in it. And why is it so conditioned hard there that nobody wants to write or even give it a chance, saying, nah, it's not possible. We saw it with Ron Paul. You know, in 2008, that was the only time actually I went and I wrote down a name, because where I lived before, I could. And I put Ron Paul because that was a case I could maybe make sense. Not that I believe he was going to change the system. Everything was going to be different. But even him, with that level of support, it was like, no, I have to stick with one of the two ways. I have to stick with the Republican Party because that's the way it is in this nation. Well, that's a self-fulfilling prophecy right there. You keep saying that's the way it is in this country. It is going to be the way in this country. So as someone who's been analyzing and writing about this, I would like to get your take why we always, you know, everyone uniformly say, well, they don't matter because they're not going to matter because third party, fourth party, fifth party people are irrelevant. Whether it's mainstream media, but also the alternative media going into this ignorance mode with the other existence, at least the existence of other voices. Kurt?
Well, you'll see that Gary Johnson did and both Jill Stein did relatively well considering their low numbers of 5-4%. So, I mean, the point is we're conditioned to believe that this is political system that we have is the end all and be all of what we need to do politically. I mean, and we're brainwashed, and it's like James said, you know, I mean, we're a herd. We go after, we follow the leaders, and that's precisely what's going on. But I think that's changing this time. I think that people are so disillusioned with the economy and culture and the political system that they're ready for something new. Might take another 4 years, but I see that a third party. I mean, this nation has got a long history of alternative parties, going back to the Whigs and all the other, you know, political parties beginning at from the start of the nation. And I think that increasingly people are ready to vote or cast their vote for an alternative candidate. I don't know if the nation will last that long. I mean, the economy is ready to topple over the edge. So I guess we'll see. I mean, and it's going to be interesting what Trump does. It's going to be more of the same. We have a Republican Congress now, and so it's just going to be sailing along doing the same thing. But people are getting tired of it, and I think they're ready for change. The corporate media has got a hold on the people. The propaganda is pretty strong, but I think that's changing, and alternative media is doing it. Increasingly and incrementally, people are becoming educated on how this political system is corrupt. So I think as we go forward, as they like to say, I think we can see some positive change, but I'm kind of impatient, to tell you the truth.
Speaking of impatience, there's another point I want to pose a question to James, but also to Spiro here, because I noticed that you were nodding when you had this very good optimistic video about the episode. I don't know if it was your latest, James, or it was the one before that, when you were saying that for those people who think the change is going to come with the election, the revolution has been happening. And you were pointing out to several different areas. I know you didn't have a chance to point out to everything because we all try to keep our videos short. And you were interpreting these as the signs of positive change and revolution taking place. And I noticed you nodding here. And for example, when you were talking about 3D printing in your latest episode, James, and business to business, individual to individual transactions, in terms of, you know, we are becoming less, or people who are determined to be less reliable, to rely less on the system. And the less we rely on the system, the more independent become, the more then we're going to be seeing the macro picture. I mean, that seems to be the pathway to the change. But I want both of you to tell our viewers about this optimism, or the signs of optimism you're observing with the internet, with the change in technology, and with some of these examples that you presented and you agree with, Spiro. And then I want to come back and I'm going to inject my impatience and negativism, and hopefully we'll come out of this show with kind of a nice balance in position. James, let's start with you first.
Well, all right. Well, as you pointed out in my recent video, I was pointing to the fact that the real revolution is already underway. And these are, I mean, clearly revolutionary times. We clearly have widespread, massive discontent amongst the entire electorate, to use that term. And I hate to use that term because it's to speak in the statist language. But the electorate is clearly unhappy with the system. That's clearly what Sanders was about. That's clearly what the Trump vote is about. That's clearly what "Not My President" and "Drain the Swamp" and all of this political rhetoric that's swirling around right now is about. But to me, this is not a political change that is happening. The political change that is happening is just a reflection of the underlying societal changes that are happening, which actually, I believe, themselves are largely determined by technological changes that are happening. Rather than the great man view of history, I think there's a much better argument to be made for the technological view of history and the way that things like the printing press or the steam engine can change politics in ways that are more fundamental than anything like that. And we are living through such times, obviously, as we speak. Everyone has their little tracking slave device in their pocket, which for all the horrible tracking and everything that it does, has also opened up ways of communication that were completely impossible to even imagine even a decade ago, let alone a couple of decades ago. And I put it into context by my own personal example. I remember vividly back when I was in the government indoctrination camps as a child in Canada, I had to go through those types of things. I'm sure everyone probably experienced when they were going through the system. What are you going to be when you grow up? You know, here's your project. You're going to have to go and research that industry and find out, you know, how you're going to make it and blah, 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 and talk to the career counselor and da, da, da. So I, at the time, I'm like, well, I like writing. I want to be a writer. So, okay. And so I interviewed my friend's mom, my mom's friend, who had written some like book of poetry or something for some tiny little Canadian press or whatever. And even at the time, I realized all of this is so stupid. I'm not actually learning how to make my way as a writer. This isn't going to be useful for me. And now I think of it from my perspective now. Flash forward 20 years. Yeah, I guess I'm writing, but that's not what is my career. What am I? I'm a podcaster? Is that a career? I don't even know. I don't know how to describe this. I don't know how to define it. And 20 years ago, it would have been literally unthinkable. I literally could not have imagined that I would be sitting in Japan podcasting from my living room as a career. It's totally unthinkable. And to me, that's a wonderful thing. That's an amazing thing. The fact that things can change so quickly and so drastically, so completely that you couldn't even plan it out even if you wanted to, can be a wonderful thing and can be an opportunity. What is the corollary of that? The corollary is that these people that we think we are electing to rule over and manage the economy and the world, that is the greatest trick that the ruling oligarchy has ever pulled, is to make you believe that you actually need them to steward over everything and manage everything and micromanage everything. The point is not just that they're corrupt. The point is not just that it's always the most evil, sick, twisted psychopaths that get into these positions of power. It's that even if they were angels descended from heaven to steward over everything, they could not manage this. It's because the relations that are going on between people that are facilitated by technologies that couldn't even be envisioned a couple of decades ago cannot be managed by anyone, should not be managed by anyone. So I think the expression of what is happening right now in this changing societal landscape that's being facilitated by new technologies and new ways of communicating and new ways of interacting with people is one way that is being manifested, is in the political sphere. But that's the least interesting manifestation of it for me. What is interesting to me is human freedom and the way that people can interact with each other without the need for the middleman. And it is the radical decentralization of absolutely everything, whether we're talking about technology or finance or economics or transactions or media communication. Everything is being decentralized now. Gatekeepers are being smashed and pulverized. The mainstream media is falling and being exposed for the ridiculous liars that they are. So many positive things are happening here that people can directly insert themselves into. Everyone listening right now can go out there and start a blog, can start a new business and interact with people and take Bitcoin rather than taking Federal Reserve notes or whatever they prefer to interact in. All of these opportunities are there, and I just see people squandering their entire lives, investing so much of their identity in this political theater that goes on every 4 years as if that's the only thing that matters. Who is in the Oval Office is the determining factor of the entire world. That is a lie, and the ruling oligarchs want you to believe in your heart of hearts that you need them and you need to be a spectator in their spectator sport. I say screw their sport. Let's play our own game.
Spiro?
Well, I mean, I think James pretty much nailed it on the head there. You made some interesting points in your video I watched earlier about, you know, and you brought these points up again here about technology and innovation and how that's going to change our world, is going to continue to change our world. I mean, if you look at how quickly technology changed and grew and improved very, very quickly during the, you know, 21st century. And then all of a sudden, a lot of the innovation kind of stopped, at least a lot of the technology stopped, and we're kind of been stuck at that area, you know, still flying planes around that have been built 30 years ago, for example, things like that, the trains and everything. But you made some great points about, like, 3D printing, for example. That's going to revolutionize the manufacturing industry and potentially put a lot of people out of jobs. Potentially, or it's going to create new jobs. I mean, it's, and you made a great point. It's up to the people. It's up to the individual to step up and decide and determine their fate and their future. But I think, as we all can agree here, a lot of our perception of reality and what we are taking in is being messed with and manipulated. And it's time for the people to see through that. And I think they are. I think that like as Kurt said earlier, this people are starting to realize that the mainstream media isn't the best source to get their information. Alt media is rising, but we also have to take into account, James, everything and Kurt, for every win that the people have. Let's say it's the alternative media, and okay, people are moving away from the mainstream media and moving towards alternative media. Well, they're going to try to co-opt that move, and we've seen that, and they've been throwing money at other news organizations and trying to still control that narrative. And it's going to be that same, I mean, it's going to be the never-ending battle, I guess, going back and forth there. But I think that it really is. It comes down to the people. I mean, the people have more power than they think. You'll never hear that on CNN or Fox News. They're never going to tell you that the people are actually, you know, winning the information war or whatever you want to call it. I mean, it's that's why this is so great. This is why one of the examples, I'm honored to be here on this panel with the three of you this evening. You know, I mean, you guys are out there setting the trends, putting out the information, actually contributing, making a difference, stepping up, putting yourself out there, putting your neck out there. Because, I mean, we've all seen and heard the stories of the persecution that comes along with, you know, people who have stood up against the system, stood up against the establishment. So,
I'm going to go back to Kurt's adjective or the word he used, because it applies to me too. Maybe that's because I'm older. I'm one of the older ones here. But he said impatient, and I feel exactly the same impatience with, because we can look at the long-term changes that can happen only long-term. For example, I would say main premise of several activities Ron Paul's group took, and that was like, okay, through homeschooling or through getting into Congress and putting the right people, and maybe 20 years from now or 30 years from now we're going to get there. And that's true. A lot of those things take time, and I'm not going to disagree with that. But when you look at the urgency of some of the other situations, I mean, you did this video, James, and that had to do with the beheading of this boy. And then what is happening in Yemen, you know, you're looking at these people who don't even have plumbing, drinking water coming through, you know, plumbing. They don't have any military tanks, defense. They don't have any technology. They don't have iPhone. 90 plus percent of people in Yemen. And we are every day going bombing the hell out of these people. We are dropping our drones, bombing Pakistan, and the translation of this bombing is like, okay, we bombed. We are creating thousands of orphans. And there is the other side of the coin with technology, because the enemy, the shadow government, the deep state, the war profiteers, they are taking advantage of the same innovations here. Now they are sitting there in Las Vegas and they are pressing a couple of buttons. They don't have to have justification, any kind of warrants, anything. And boom, there it goes, the drones. And that goes like, oh, 45 people, the whole family got wiped out of, you know, out of the face of the earth, and it's just completely gone. Now, considering all this, I mean, I'm being impatient, and I think my impatience is justified, because all the stuff that we are accomplishing, and absolutely, I agree with both of you, Spiro and James, but then I'm looking at the urgency of the destruction we are engaged. People who are engaged in this destruction on our behalf with our tax money. Thanks to you, all of you who went there and you voted, you know, with your vote, they're saying, hey, we were voted into this office. Therefore, our actions is consented upon. Basically, they gave us the right to do this. That's what your vote means. It's not only putting one person in the office. It also, your vote is for the vote for all that person's subsequent action. As the commander-in-chief, if that person goes to Libya and kills tens of thousands of people or puts terrorists on the ground in Syria and turns a nation completely upside down, they are saying that's based on your vote. So actually, there are these big price tags attached to the vote that you think you're casting every 4 years is entertainment. It is a high price tag attached to it, considering how it gets justified. And the people who are in your name, in our name, going and doing these things, I feel the same impatience. So I'm going to go around with this. But Kurt, what did you really mean by your impatience? I just injected my whole impatience into this. But when you said, personally, I'm getting impatient with this, what did you mean, Kurt?
I'm probably the oldest one here. I was an anti-war activist in 1970. And I've been looking at wars now for more than 40 years. Every administration comes up with an excuse. You know, you got the neocons that came in there with Bush. They perpetuated this forever war. And so my impatience stems from the fact that we're a brutal, vicious, violent country inflicting our violence on, like you said, Yemen. Of course, that's indirectly through Saudi Arabia. But that's basically where my impatience comes from, is this brutal violence that this system, this government, inflicts on the rest of the world. And it's going to come back on us. It's coming back on us already. Economically, politically, and socially. But that's where my impatience is primarily at, is with that fact that, like you said, I mean, they elect somebody and then that's, they say that that's what you voted for. You voted me into office to do this, to do these things. And so my impatience stems from the fact that we cannot politically change that war machine. It's just perpetual, and it keeps grinding on with an immense toll of life. So that's where my impatience comes from.
Well, James, now with all the great points you made in your latest videos, how would we apply those positive signs into this? Meaning every single day, every hour counts. Every single day, every hour counts in terms of the lives of human beings, in terms of people's lives. And how do those apply, those positive changes that we are seeing and the positive signs when it comes to this particular area, which is to me the most urgent area. And I agree with Kurt on that completely.
I agree that this is obviously urgent and that lives really do hang in the balance. And I hope that if there are any Trump supporters listening to our conversation, that they will, at least at this point, go to DonaldJTrump.com and look at his policies page for national defense, where he talks about increasing the size of the U.S. Army to 540,000 active duty soldiers, rebuilding the Navy towards a goal of 350 ships, providing the Air Force with 1,200 fighter aircraft, growing the U.S. Marine Corps to 36 battalions, taking interest in a serious missile defense system, emphasizing cyber warfare, ending the defense sequester. It is an exceptionally militaristic plan that is in place. And when you combine that with absolute off-the-rails, raging neocons like Bolton and people like that, who are now getting closer and closer to being in cabinet positions where they can dream their dream of waging all-out war in Iran, yep, things are very serious. So I think we're all in agreement that voting certainly didn't really fundamentally change that. It may have momentarily derailed the Cold War 2.0 rhetoric with Russia, and that's to the good. But if it ends up being is another warmongering rhetoric ratchet up against Iran, then what did that really accomplish? But I have a question that hopefully will tease out this issue a little bit more. In when you were explaining this, Sibel, you used "we" multiple times. We're bombing. We are sitting there. We are droning. We're dropping bombs. Why did you use the expression "we"?
Yes, I know. We had this very interesting discussion previously in one of our roundtable. Because here it is. I am forcefully parting with parts of my salary, okay? And that is that income, whether it's 15 or 20% or 22%, and whether $5 of it goes into creating orphans, whether $3 of it goes into creating families who don't have children, that's forcefully taken away from me.
Yeah.
And me,
that's exactly
here,
right. Okay. Right. That's the clarification I wanted. I agree. So for if you're sitting there in the United States, you're paying taxes, you are paying for the military.
Yes.
You are paying for this destruction and death. So if we know that voting is just going to actually increase that because they're going to increase the defense budget, and, you know, nothing's going to change that way. So voting and the political game is clearly not going to do anything. So what is the only possible answer to that? You pay your taxes are going to go to kill people on the other side of the planet. You want to stop killing people on the, or you want your country or whatever to stop killing people on the other side of the planet. The only answer in that situation is to, at the very least, reduce the amount of taxes you're paying to the least amount possible without being thrown in jail for, you know, the privilege, unless you're willing to go to jail for not paying your taxes and all of that. So the only real solution here is counter economic activity that is in gray or black markets, that is not overseen by the government is not taking their share, that you are interacting with people directly and under the table, whether that's through cash or Bitcoin or alternative currencies or whatever it is.
I'm glad you brought this up, because this is a very important issue. And I think we need to have a roundtable on this. Right now, there is this war on cash everywhere, but even here in the United States. I was shocked because I went there to put a few documents in a safe in some financial institution, you know, like this little safe you get. Because anyhow, when I went there, I was given this form that it's illegal for me to keep any cash or silver or gold cash, any kind of thing that can constitute cash in the bank that I went. And I said, when in the world did they pass that law? What I put in that safe deposit, you know, wherever I'm keeping certain things, documents, it's my business. But now they have made it illegal. But also through my travel, I have observed this everywhere. You know, I was in a few actually European countries just a couple of months ago, and people, they make the deal very straightforward. It's like, okay, look, this shirt is $25. I give it to you for 21. If you pay cash, you don't pay the damn tax. I don't pay the damn tax. You are happy. I'm happy. I love it. When I go to a lot of Middle Eastern countries, or I go to, you know, in Greece, people, straightforward, they go at it, and they do it because they don't believe in their government. They don't believe that their taxes or the use of their taxes in many cases are justified. But that is rare here in the United States. It's, you know, it's you see it in Italy, you see it in Greece, you see it in Middle East, you see it in South America, Central America. But in the US, it's like they give you the look. Of course, I have seen some people, and usually those people come from the more libertarian background. You know, there must, you know, maybe there is a painter who says, guess what, I can do this, but if you give me cash, I'll do it that. But they are making it more and more difficult. But this is one topic we really, really need to revisit and talk about: the war on cash, but all sorts of counter-economic action that you refer to, because yes, that is one way to do it. And the other thing besides tax, maybe it's because I grew up in the midst of wars. Maybe it's because my father had to amputate so many people, because my father had to drill holes in some little baby's face where the bomb had melted and the nose had been melted. And in order to open the air passage, 6 months old babies had to have holes drilled into their face. Okay. And these are the faces of war we don't get to see here in the United States. People don't get to see. They can't really relate. It's an abstract word, wars. The ones that is inflicted from the United States upon many, many countries in this world. But I'm never happy with myself, and I don't believe I'm taking enough action. Like Kurt said, I have spent most of my life being anti-war. My father spent all his life to, you know, as an anti-war. And as you said, counter-economic actions, protests, walking, saying no, actually saying I'm not going to vote for any of these people. As you said, I mean, today with the internet, you would think if voting was answered, that there would be really viable third, fourth, fifth parties with people who would come. And that is not happening. It's not the answer. But I have to agree. I have to agree with you. There are things we can do as individuals. One is the school system. I'm going to give a very quick example here. My 8-year-old came to me and she said, tomorrow they're going to make us vote. It's Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump. I said, okay. She said, Mama, I don't want to vote. I said, okay, so you tell them you don't want to vote. She comes back and she says, they don't let me. They say, either I have to do Hillary Clinton or I have to do Donald Trump. I said, that can't be right. First of all, you don't have to vote because it's not compulsory in this country. They are telling you wrong. This is a public school in Bend, Oregon. Okay, people? And her teachers and principals, they are telling hundreds of little kids, 7, 8 years old, that there is no option that you don't vote. And these are the only two people you vote. So I sat her in front of the computer and I showed her Gary Johnson and the other people from Green Party. I said, they're not only these two people. There are other people as well. Well, she went there and she made a case as an 8-year-old. But the school, the public school in Bend, Oregon, Deschutes County, they told her that no, those people didn't matter. Not that their vote matters, but that they had to either pick Democrat or Republican, either Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump. And they made my child cast a vote that she said vocally she didn't want to cast. And they told her she was wrong. Those people didn't matter. It was between the two. Now, if there are any people, okay, anybody viewing this video here that we are showing you, this it will be published in 2-3 days. If you are with Green Party, Purple Party, whatever third, fourth, fifth party you are, I mean, that should be challenged. This is a great example to challenge that. First of all, those parties, where are they? They should come and say, let's first of all defeat them. You believe in the judicial system in this country? Why don't you come and show and say, this is what they are indoctrinating children with, okay? This is how they are conditioning the children. It's wrong information. They are making it compulsory. And these helpless 7, 8 years old, how do you think they're going to act when they are voting age 21? They're going to say, I'm going to either vote blue or red. And I must vote because it's my civic duty. Well, this is exactly what they are doing in school. So if there are any people with resources, legal resources, we don't have it currently. Hopefully we will have it one day, because we have to challenge these practices as we see them. Going and selecting some candidate is not going to fix it. As you come across these things, stand up, be vocal, do something. So if you think there is a value in your party, if you are with whoever, Ralph Nader, Gary Johnson, here it is. I am a parent, okay? My daughter witnessed this. She went through this. In Bend, Oregon, this is what they are doing to hundreds and hundreds of children. So why don't you stand up as third or fourth or fifth political party? Come and challenge. I will bring the lawsuit. I'm volunteering here, and it was my child going through it. But these opportunities arise. We must stand up and challenge the system every single chance we get. And I guess this is the positive part we all agree with. And the fact that don't underestimate the power of individuals, whether it is by keeping, you know, challenging the currency system, whether it is by homeschooling your child, you are actually giving it. You're giving this third finger to the system when you're doing that. And believe me, I have brought this up in our other, during other roundtables. This is one of the issues that's going to be illegalized. They're going to come after parents in this country, in the United States, who are homeschooling. They're going to accuse them of child abuse because they are not exposing their children to the state's indoctrination. Anybody who laughs right now, please mark my word. Hopefully we won't have to, but otherwise, James Corbett and I, with Spiro, we're going to be replaying this video. It's going to be your turn. Your turn is coming. Whether you're anti-vaccination, you want to have a choice or say in that, whether you're a homeschooler, every one of us are going to be and are currently the targets. But here's an opportunity. And James, here with you being witness, I am issuing an invitation. I'm willing to sue. I would like to see these people who claim they take their own third, fourth party seriously to join me in this. Because this is what the public system is doing every day. Indoctrination. And this is how we can actually predict future. Because these kids who went through this schooling in this country, how would we expect anything different from them?
Well, yes, I think that, it's unbelievable. When you told me that story, Sabelle, that they, not only did they force her to vote your daughter at the school, that she could only choose between left or right, red or blue, as if there was no other candidates that existed. Those were your choices. I mean, it blew my mind. And it's taking place in public schools, which is, Corbett, as you put it before, it's the indoctrination camps, the government indoctrination camps at this point. So you're completely right. I think we all agree that the power does lie within the individual. And the more independent you can be from the establishment, from the system, from the government, the better off you are. In every circumstance that I can think of off the top of my head. I would like to thank all of our guests for joining us here. I'd like to go around and get any final points if you have them, and we'll start with James.
No, I think that's a good point to end things on. I do believe in the power of individuals simply because there is no such thing as some power of some magical collective that selects some sort of ruling oligarchy to make everything better for everyone. It will serve to do good things for some people because if it didn't, it wouldn't continue to function. But on the whole, of course, it's going to do a whole lot of evil crap that you don't want to be a part of. But you have to sign on. You can't sign on part of the way. You can't give your taxes only to do good things for people. It's a whole all or nothing deal. So the only action you really have at your disposal is the types of things we're talking about here: counter economics, homeschooling, these types of actions, creating your own media, as it were. These types of actions are the only things that people can actually affect in their life. And that's all that I really care about. I do not care about the political spectator sport that they dangle in front of our face as if that's going to give us a real change.
Thank you for that, James. Kurt, any final points you'd like to mention here?
I'd just like to reemphasize what Sabelle said about the child in the school. I think it's vitally important that parents get involved with their children. Unfortunately, a lot of parents are not educated on this particular subject in the political realm. But I think that's vitally important that we do that with our children. Otherwise, they're up to the mercy of that public school, you know, an indoctrination camp.
Well, that's right. And they are our future, after all. You know, I mean, so again, Sibel, any final points?
No, I think I talked with more than anybody else. But what Kurt said, I have to agree with him, because I brought it up with a few other parents. And they said, hey, when we were growing up, it was the same thing. It was always two parties. So what's wrong with that? And I said, well, that is not true, though. There are other parties. So they were saying, the other parents were saying that, well, when they were, because I didn't go through elementary school to any schooling except for the universities here in the States. They said when they went to school, that was the same thing. And they were told to do that, which basically tells you why we will never have a chance with a third or fourth or fifth party. And because they said they went through that, they didn't see anything wrong. They think I'm the crazy mother who's being picky.
Even more absurd, the fact that, they can't distinguish, make these critical distinctions because they're so wrapped up in what's going on in their own lives. And that's, you know, that's part of it, too, is integrating your life with the way you feel politically. But, the children are that, you know, you've got to do, it's all about the children, really, basically.
Right. And then you're going to have how many of these parents are saying, no, you know, you got to vote Trump. No. And then they hear from the other parent, no, you got to vote Hillary. And then the kid's just caught in the middle at this point. I can't even imagine it.
So, when I was a child, they told us that anybody could be president under the system, you know, which is the odd.
Anybody can be president as long as you're a billionaire elite connected insider.
At the same time, they're telling us to hide under our desks because the commies were going to bomb us.
Right. Yeah. Duck and cover. The economy is imploding. So, again, I'd like to thank our guests, Kurt Nimmo of Newsbud.com and Another Day in the Empire, and James Corbett of CorbettReport.com, always joined with Sibel Edmonds of Newsbud.com. I'm Spiro. And don't forget that these presentations are only made possible with your support. Newsbud is 100% people-funded, just as Corbett Report is. And so we are running our Kickstarter campaign right now. We are running short on time, and we could really use your support. So step up, make your pledge, support independent media. For Newsbud.com, I'm Spiro.
Support independent media. Go to Kickstarter.com today.
We have a long way to go, not only to continue, but to expand, become more effective, and grow together. We are only answerable to you, and you are the only ones who can keep Newsbud in existence and allow it to go much further in pursuit of journalism with integrity. Please join us. Join the Newsbud movement by kindly and generously pledging towards this 100% people-funded media with integrity. We have accomplished a lot, but this is only the beginning, and that is my promise to you.